because genocide against native people is still going on today all over the world.
Native Solidarity News. It's about you, too. CKUT, CKDU, CFBEX, CFUV, CHFN, CHLY, CHMA, CHSR, CJLY, CJSF, CJSW, Radio 90.
Land is the basis of all independence.
Welcome once again to Native Solidarity News. Native Solidarity News is a national radio service and part of an international network of information and action in support of Indigenous peoples' survival and dignity. We're all volunteers committed to promoting Native self-determination, culturally, economically, spiritually, and otherwise. Native Solidarity News has been produced at CKUT since 1993, and each week we try to bring you news and an in-depth feature. This week, we will be speaking with several members of the Ganasadage community about the final outcome of the trials that have been going on as a result of their... Of the January 12th, 2004 defense of their community. We'll be speaking with Elder Squinati Montour, Sheila Gagne, Sonia Gagne, excuse me, Patsy Bonspiel, Sheila Bonspiel, and the elected Grand Chief, Stephen Bonspiel. That'll be coming up in the second half of the show, but we just have a few announcements. Before all of that, so the first one comes from the U.S., where once again Native American prisoners are being discriminated against at the Crossroads Correctional Center, the CCC, in Shelby, Montana. They're asking for your help, which is needed as soon as possible, so as to protect them from serious retaliation after some of them have filed official complaints against the violations of their religious freedoms. Please, they're asking you to contact the warden of the prison, the Department of Corrections, and Native American legislatures, both in the state and in the federal departments, to respectfully but firmly request their immediate assistance to put an end to the violations of their rights. This is in regards to the sweat lodge ceremony at the CCC, which has been canceled the last 5 out of 6 times. Both the warden and the chaplain were served with the settlement agreement from the Human Rights Bureau, which states that any regularly scheduled sweat lodge ceremony that is canceled must be rescheduled within the week, but this has not been happening. Another violation is that the Native American inmates are not allowed to have personal religious items such as cedar, sage, and sweetgrass in their cells, although it has been approved and stated in prison policy. The settlement agreement states that Native American inmates must be allowed to have sacred religious items, and that officers cannot open their medicine bags, but must instruct the inmates to do so. Officers also cannot throw eagle feathers on the floor, an action which recently happened to one inmate. The Native American inmates in Montana have had a very difficult time having their traditions and ceremonies recognized and respected as the Christian and Catholic religions have been. To make things worse, the CCC retaliates when inmates bring to light civil and religious issues, or any issues pertaining to due process or medical care. Please call or email as soon as you can the Director of Corrections and the Native American state legislatures in Montana, asking why this is being allowed to happen, and to request that they put an end to these violations. This call out is put out by the Justice Network, which can be reached at justicenetwork@fastmail.fm. And they're asking that you write to the warden, James McDonald, at his email isn't included, but his phone number is 406-434-7055, and that you write to the director of the Department of Corrections, Bill Slaughter, and you can call him at 406-444-3911 or email him at tward@state.mt.us. And now we have some news coming from the Mapuche communities and resistance in occupied Chile. This first piece is compiled from Santiago Indie Media, a press release by the Chilean Popular and Indigenous Network, and a statement by the Juan Pilalef community. The Chilean Popular and Indigenous Network is calling for your support and solidarity with the Mapuche people. To this day, Mapuche people still struggle against injustice and repression from the Chilean state. Today, when everybody thinks that Chile is following the path to democracy and economic development, the human rights violations of indigenous peoples hasn't stopped, and the plunder of their culture and land continues. They call to you to be a part of this initial campaign to denounce the violation of indigenous rights in Chile. In some of the last days of 2005, the Mapuche community Juan Pilalef was confronted with harsh police violence. The confrontations started during a peaceful protest by the Mapuche community against illegal road constructions through several Mapuche territories. The police chased away the protesting group and entered the community using guns, tear gas, and clubs. The following day, Juana Calfuano and her sister were arrested without a warrant. When released yesterday, both women showed bad injuries from being beaten by the police. The Juan Pilalef community is shocked by the action taken by the Chilean police. It has used an excessive force and has not considered women or children. The Mapuche community of Juan Pilalef asks urgently for the following. 1. For the international community to intervene. 2. For human rights organizations to intervene. And 3. For you to make this knowledge public. They have sent a very full press release and sample letter, plus addresses to which they would ask people to get in contact to voice their complaints. So if anybody would like this email sent to them, please write to nsn@ckut.ca and we'll pass it along to you. In essence, they're asking for us to write to Chilean officials, to the Minister of Justice, and to Chilean embassies here to demand the respect of Mapuche autonomy and an end to the violent political harassment of their communities. To get in touch with the Chilean Popular and Indigenous Network, write to chilenet@bigpond.com. On January 25th, that's tomorrow, Chilean tribunals will announce their verdict against Lonco José Carigüeyo Saravia of the Mapuche community in Chile. According to the Anti-Terrorist Bill 18.314, he is accused of terrorist arson. This legislation was inherited from the fascist Pinochet regime, but the current so-called socialist government of Chile doesn't hesitate to use it in its criminalization of the Mapuche resistance to the multinational assault of their lands by many corporations, including some Canadian, with complicity of the neoliberal governments of Chile and Argentina. Other Mapuche political prisoners with similar charges received sentences going as far as 10 years plus a day of imprisonment, as well as fines amounting to approximately $1 million Canadian. To be paid in damages to the multinational deforestation company Minico S.A., a prosecuting party, along with the public ministry and Chilean police force. So we're just going to take a quick musical break, and then we'll be right back with more Native Solidarity news.
Con la saya de tu bikis bailando. lorito con su monito, hay un lorito con su monito, que es un regalo de San Benito para la fiesta de los negritos. Hay un lorito con su monito, hay un lorito con su monito, que es un regalo de San Benito para la fiesta de los negritos.
Welcome back to Native Solidarity News. We've just been listening to Inti Illimani from their album La Resistance. Oh, sorry, that's my French accent. La Resistencia Chilena. So yeah, now we're back with some news updates. So the next piece comes from the Prince Rupert Daily News. The Laxqualams and Metlakatla First Nations are taking the federal government to court, alleging that it has refused to consult and accommodate them concerning the development of Prince Rupert's container port. And they say they will seek an injunction to stop phase one of the project if construction proceeds. The Port Authority, meanwhile, says that if construction doesn't get underway within days, the whole deal would come crashing down. The two nations, known as the Coast Tsimshian, have filed a notice of application in federal court against Minister of Transportation Jean Lapierre and the Attorney General of Canada. It's the federal government refusing to recognize Aboriginal rights and title. I'm kind of disappointed with that, said Gary Reese, chief counselor of Laxqualams, a community of 1,000 people located to the northwest of Prince Rupert. The government is arguing that the First Nations gave up their rights to consultation when the existing bulk terminal was built in 1960, and that Metlakatla's former reserve site, upcountry from the terminal, was subject to a surrender agreement in 1906, when Laxqualam's claim was subject to a settlement in 2003. However, McGade of the representative of the communities said that the terminal site isn't on the former reserve sites, and that Aboriginal title that surrounds the site is not limited to the container port. They, the federal government, are taking a very impoverished, narrow view of Aboriginal title, according to him, and we're being forced to go to court to say that the Supreme Court of Canada has repeatedly said that they need to take a wide view. The two First Nations say that if the port proceeds with construction, they will file an injunction to have their case heard within days. Don Crussell, president and CEO of the Prince Rupert Port Authority, says that the action is extremely concerning. This project cannot survive further delays. The China Paper Group was also banking on cheap backhaul rates to transport pulp from the Skeena pulp mill. Needless to say, these nations are having a strong impact on the economic system of the colonists, as well as asserting very real autonomy over their territory. My respect goes out to the Laxcolams and Metlakatla nations. The next news piece comes from the blog Sinulog about the Philippines. The different churches in Mindanao, indigenous peoples, and Moro groups met January 17th to the 21st in Dipolog City in the Philippines for the Mindanao-wide Interfaith Conference on Mining Plunder, hosted by Panalipdan Mindanao, an island-wide alliance of anti-large-scale mining advocates. The alliance demands the scrapping of the Mining Act of 1995. Panalipdan Mindanao calls the Mining Act a threat to the nation's patrimony and future. The conference serves as a catalyst, a gathering of nations, not just of words. And organizers hope it will lead towards, quote, tangible actions to frustrate actual mining incursions in communities. Anti-mining advocates seek to sharpen strategies to meet head-on transnational mining companies, which are using their immense resources to spin lies and myths about the economic benefits to be gained from mining, this statement from Panalipdan added. The group will formulate plans of a Mindanao-wide advocacy on the impact of large-scale mining on communities, like displacements, loss of livelihood, and human rights abuses. The conference organizers chose Western Mindanao as the host, owing to the presence of mining applications and explorations in the region. The Canadian firm of TVI Resources, for example, is operating in Sayocan, which is facing stiff opposition from churches, Lumad, and Moro communities. This again is from Sinulog. If there's a Canadian TVI Resources in your neighborhood, do give them a call and let them know to stay the hell out of the Philippines. The next piece of news comes from The Age, published in Australia. Aboriginal children across the Australian state of Victoria are 10 times more likely to be removed from their homes and put in care than other children, other non-Aboriginal children, according to a report. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare report confirms that Indigenous children are vastly overrepresented in the child protection system nationally, and the worst rate persists in Victoria, despite it having a relatively small Aboriginal population. When a survey was taken last June, over 500 Indigenous children were in out-of-home placements, making up 12% of children in such care in the state. According to Michael White, from the Center for Excellence in Children and Family Welfare, over recent years, there have been repeated findings that indicate that Aboriginal children are overrepresented in the system, and both mainstream and Aboriginal family services need increased funding to address this complex situation. Victoria's child protection legislation, like that in other jurisdictions, expresses a preference for Indigenous children to be placed with appropriate Indigenous families. In the year of June, however, more than a third of the affected youth were placed with non-Indigenous carers. There are still too many Aboriginal children being placed with non-Indigenous families, said Muriel Bamblett from the Victorian Aboriginal Child Care Agency. History says that children who don't grow up connected suffer from greater dysfunction. Stolen Generations is evidence of this. Stolen Generations is a phenomena not unfamiliar in Canada, but it's given a name in Australia, which is the generation of children who were stolen from their families and placed in residential schools. In Australia, they are called the Stolen Generation because they have no links to their culture and are not accepted and are not a part of the dominant white society, therefore the Stolen Generation. Ms. Bamblett said that Indigenous children continued to come into state care at higher rates because of family violence and systematic poverty. This article is once again from The Age. So now we're going to take another musical break, and we will be right back with more Native Solidarity news. This song is coming from this amazing compilation put out by the Canada Council for the Arts It's called The Soundtrack of a People, a companion to the Encyclopedia of Native Music. We just got it at the station, and it has three CDs of Native music, both contemporary, traditional, and a mix of the two. So what we're going to hear now is Paul Whiteman and his orchestra featuring vocals by Bing Crosby and Al Rinker. This is a Coeur d'Alene song, and it's called Wistful and Blue. You're listening to Native Solidarity News. So you're back. you're back listening to Native Solidarity News. Again, we just heard Paul Whiteman and his orchestra featuring vocals by Bing Crosby and Al Rinker, a Coeur d'Alene, and in the background, we're listening to Mildred Bailey, a Coeur d'Alene. This is her song, Rockin' Chair. So we're about ready for the feature for today. It's going to be dealing primarily with the recent trial of the Ganastage defendants, who were on trial for defending their community against a coup d'etat and a police invasion. That trial lasted several months. They were found. 13 of the people were found guilty in December. and last week we found that 7 of the people were sentenced to prison time. Some of them up, one of them up to 15 months of prison time, Gary Gabriel. A couple others to a year, and others to lesser time. Yesterday, they had bail hearings at which 6 of them were allowed to, were allowed out on bail while their appeals are in process. However, Gary Gabriel, the man who was sentenced to 15 months time, is not allowed on bail during the course of his appeals. So Gary Gabriel, who did nothing but defend his community, is in prison now. A political prisoner from Gansadage. And we will have contact information for him shortly so that people can get in touch and show their support and show their love and let him know that we really appreciate everything he did, everything all these people did. You know, anytime a people stand up and assert control over their territory, over their community, it makes it that much easier for the rest of us. So my respect goes out to all those people, and Gary Gabriel, we're thinking of you. So now we're going to hear from Skwanadi Montour, Sheila Bonspiel, Patsy Bonspiel, Sonia Gagne, and the elected Grand Chief, Stephen Bonspiel. You are listening to Native Solidarity News.